Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It is December 4th, 2018, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. You're listening to a live broadcast of the Ant Canary Experience. I am your host, Ant Canary, and for the next hour 25, we're going to be talking about a pretty jacked up subject pretty jacked up practice that was done in the United States. And it seems like some people make jokes about this kind of stuff, you know, which, you know, this is something that shouldn't be joked about. This is what we're talking about tonight is pretty banged up. But we're going to talk about this because it is history, and you need to know about it. So the title of tonight's program is The History of Lynchings in America. And it's a long history, and not only are we going to be talking about what the meaning of lynching and give examples, we're also going to be talking about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which got burnt down because of a lie, and there were black people lynched in that also. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes, and I'm going to later on, before the show ends, I am going to give you a year-by-year total of lynchings in America from 18, the list that I have runs from 1882 to 1968. Talk about that in just a few minutes. And there are, you may know about some of this stuff, and you may not know about it, but, we're going to get to this in just a second. So if you want to call in and jump in on the conversation, 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682, or if you just want to sit back and listen, that's cool too. Either want to be fine. So let's go ahead and jump into this, and I've got clips to play and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk about this. This is rather, something that I wouldn't, and in any normal case, I wouldn't want to talk about this. But like I said, it's history. It's part of this country's history. And when we had someone running for office in Mississippi, made a joke about this a few weeks ago, and she ended up winning, which is something I don't understand, but I guess, Mississippi, I've never been to Mississippi, probably never want to go to Mississippi. If you're listening in Mississippi, no offense to you, but, it's just one of those places where I never want to go visit. But let's talk about this. The definition of lynching is the practice of murder by a group of extrajudicial action. Lynchings in the United States rose in number after the American Civil War in the late 1800s, following the emancipation of slaves. They declined in the 1920s, but have continued to take place in the 21st century. Most lynchings were of African American men in the South. Women were also lynched, and white lynchings of blacks occurred in Midwestern and border states, especially during the 20th century Great Migration of blacks out of the South. The purpose was to enforce white supremacy and intimidate blacks by racial terrorism. On a per capita basis, lynchings were also common in California and the Old West, especially of Latinos, although they represented less than 10% of the national total. Native Americans and Asian Americans also lynched. Other ethnicities, white, Finnish American, Jewish, Irish, Italian American, were also lynched. So this was things where a lot of, toward the end, there were more blacks than whites that got lynched, but we're going to talk about that in a minute, but let me grab this phone call. Excuse me. I hope everything's working on it. And I think, according to what I have here, I think this is Brother Mo. What's up, Brother Mo?
Peace and blessings, Brother Anthony. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. And yourself?
I can't complain. Can't complain at all.
Sure. Yes, sir. I had missed last week's show, so I said, well, let me make sure I call in this week.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, last week was what did you talk about last week? Last week was pretty interesting. Yeah. We talked about how the government played its part on destroying the black family. Yeah, it was a pretty interesting show. I was kind of hot at the end of that show too. So yeah, probably gonna be hot at the end of this one too.
What's this one about?
You know, well, we're talking about lynchings in this tonight. I started talking about, I want to talk about this tonight because they had the, I forgot her name, but a woman in Mississippi running for office kind of made a joke, which I didn't think was funny. Pretty much saying if somebody had offered her a chance to go to a public, well, they said public hanging. She said, you know, she'd be in the front row and laughed about it.
Exactly.
And then when she got called out for it, then all of a sudden, that's not what I meant. Kills me with those people is they say something stupid. They don't think that people are listening to them and videotaping and all that kind of stuff. And they say something dumb, and all of a sudden, well, that's not what I meant, or that's not what I said. You know, they're always lying about something that they said, but it came out of your mouth. So if it came out of your mouth, you said it. You know, so you can't turn around and lie about it later saying, nah, that wouldn't beat up somebody. Yes, it was, because they got you on tape saying it.
Exactly.
You know, and they think this stuff is funny. And then the thing, too, that gets me is that you have some people to this very day, and I argue with them a lot, that always want to pretend that, you know, black people and brown people in this country are the ones out here doing all this crime and, you know, doing all this other stuff. And what I have to remind them that, you know, according to statistics, white people commit the most crime in this country. And these lynchings that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes were all done by white folk. None of these lynchings were done by black people. None of these lynchings were done by black people lynching white people. They were all done by white people lynching black people, other white people, Native Americans, and, you know, whoever else. It was all done by them. So this is something that came out of their imagination, you know, and they did this stuff for years. So they can't come around, you know, and call somebody else, you know, crime, you know, full of crime and savage. You know, no. What they need to do is look in the mirror, and they'll see the real savage because they're the ones that committed all this kind of stuff, you know. Some of these stories I'm going to get to later is like, you know, they were all done by white mobs. And the jacked up thing about a lot of these things is that they took pictures. They took some of these pictures and put them in, made them into postcards. They would talk about some, if there was a lynching going on and in certain places, they would talk about this stuff in church and have tickets for people to go see this stuff. Children, women,
they were talking about it in church.
Know, they would talk about this stuff in church. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
To them, this was some kind of, this was almost kind of like going to a concert. You would tell your friends, yeah, I'm going to go see so-and-so, you know, and they would sell tickets, this kind of stuff. And they thought this stuff, you know, they didn't seem to have any problems with this stuff. But they would talk about this stuff in church. You know, you'd have some lynchings that, you know, had thousands of people going to go see this stuff. Not only were some of these people hung, but a lot of them were burnt. A lot of them were tortured. A lot of them had things cut off, fingers. Some of these people even took pieces of these people home as souvenirs. You know, and since this is radio and you can't see, you know, I would suggest that if you want to get an idea about what this was all about, go to Google and Google lynchings. And you'll see some of the pictures, you know, and almost every picture you see, you know, it's usually if somebody black surrounded by a group of white people, and they just like, you know, and they just stand around and they just watch this stuff like, you know, it don't even bother. You know, a lot of cases they set people on fire. You know, they did all kinds of stuff to these people, and it didn't even bother. And they had kids out there. You know, they had kids in the crowd looking at this stuff. You know, there's one picture that I put on the player of this little white girl standing at a lynching, and she just got this look on her face, like she just don't. I mean, it's an evil ass look that she got on her face. You know, and this kind of mentality people had is like, you know, they were sick. These some sick people.
Most definitely.
I would suggest the next time they want to call somebody else, they want to call some other group of people savage or, you know, crime, you know, full of, no, look in the mirror. Because some of
they
this
have
stuff
a perfect,
is just sick.
They have a perfect hatred of us. That's what they have, a perfect hatred of us. And, you know, we need to really realize that. They don't have no love for us.
Yeah. Mm-mm. There's even cases. There's even one case, I may have it in the notes, that, you know, there was a matter of fact, one of the clips I'm going to play, and I didn't know this until I looked it up the other day, but there was a bridge in Mississippi where they used to hang people all the time. They would just toss them off the side, you know, tie a rope to their neck and toss them off the side of the bridge, and it became known as the Hanging Bridge. I'm gonna play that clip.
Oh my God!
There was an incident where a black woman was pregnant, and she was lynched, and they cut the baby out of her belly before she died. They're just all kinds of stuff. It's just, you know, the stuff will make you sick. You know, read about this stuff because they're just sick. You know, they didn't. Even though they considered themselves to be law abiding, you know, a lot of these lynchings were you know, they made up, they had to have a reason to do it, so they would lie and make up reasons just so they could hang people, you know, and they would, you know, like I said, set them on fire, cut off limbs, castrate, I mean, whatever you could think of, they would do this kind of stuff, and you know. And we just it had reasons to justify, you know. A lot of stuff that started off, you know, back in the day in Old West, you know, you would get caught stealing somebody else's cattle or something, you know, since they didn't have courts, and, you know, they would catch you and they would hang you. That's why at first it was mostly white people that were getting caught and hung, but then as the years went on, it started to be mostly black people. So it went from mostly white to black, and then at some point in some years, I'm gonna read the list. In some years, it was just mostly black, and no whites. And then there was a period of time also during the riots. There was a time when you had riots like in the 1920s, 1919. Matter of fact, there's equivalent play that, you know. Then you have race riots, and then black people were just getting lynched like crazy. And, you know, they would have to have a reason to justify it. And people are just sick. It's just sick. That, you know, reading this stuff is like, you know, this makes no sense at all. But a lot of this was done to intimidate black people. Kind of like one of those things where we're gonna keep in your place. So,
exactly.
You know, this is something that could happen to you if you don't, you know, remember your place in society, you know, or however you want to call it. Trying to see, I want to read something to you if I can find it, you know, before I start to get pissed off because, I mean, a lot of stuff is just really messed up. But according to the Tuskegee Institute, between 1882 and 1968, 4,743 black people were lynched in this country. 4,743.
And what was the time frame on that?
1882 to 1968. And also,
I'm quite sure it's probably even more than that.
Well, there were 1,297 white people that were lynched. And other minorities, they didn't keep count on, you know, Chinese, Mexican, Indian. They didn't keep good counts on those, but most of them, let's see right here, they estimate that 597 Mexicans were lynched between 1848 and 1928. So they were pretty, you know, it's one of those things. Well, let me read you. Between the 1830s and 1850s, the majority of those lynched were white. More whites were lynched than blacks from the year 1882 to 1885. And by the 1890s, the number of blacks lynched yearly grew. And that was one of those things where, you know, they had to have a reason to do it, so they would just, you know, make up stuff. You might could say also that Emmett Till wasn't lynch per se, but he was murdered because of a lie. He was strangled. He was beaten. They had they tied it's either chain or wire around him. They threw him in the river. He died, and that was all because of a lie. And like I said, a lot of these lynchings were, you know, they had to make up a lie in order to, you know. But then, and there was one case, I can't remember which one it was, that you had a lynch mob break into a jail and take black people out of the jail and lynch them in the middle of towns. Police wouldn't do anything about it. You know, the courts were pretty much, you know, pussies, so they, you know, they wouldn't do anything about it. It's just crazy. Here we go. Let me read you this right quick. There's some facts about this stuff. Let me read you this. Henry Smith, an alcoholic African-American handyman accused of murdering a policeman's daughter, was a noted lynching victim because of the ferocity of the attack against him and the huge crowd that gathered. He was lynched at Paris, Texas, in 1893 for killing Myrtle Vance, the 3-year-old daughter of a Texas policeman, after the policeman had assaulted Smith. Smith was not tried in a court of law. A large crowd followed the lynching, as was common then in the style of public executions. Henry Smith was fastened to a wooden platform, tortured for 50 minutes by red-hot iron brands, and burned alive while more than 10,000 spectators cheered. Fewer than 1% of lynch mob participants were ever convicted by local courts, and they were seldom prosecuted or brought to trial. By the late 19th century, the trial juries in most of the southern United States were all white because African Americans had been disenfranchised, and only registered voters could serve as juries. Other juries never let the matter go past the inquest. So, in other words, only white people were allowed to be lawyers, judges, prosecutors, and they were the only ones that could register to vote. So if you were black, you couldn't register to vote, so you had no power. Hold on 1 second. I'll wait for just a second. I'm hearing a lot of noise in the background. Let me read you this. Here's another one. In 1892, a police officer in Port Jervis, New York, tried to stop the lynching of a black man who had been wrongly accused of assaulting a white woman. The mob responded by putting the noose around the officer's neck as a way of scaring him and completed killing the other man. Although at the inquest, the officer identified 8 people who had participated in the lynching, including the former chief of police, the jury determined that the murder had been carried out by person or persons unknown. In Duluth, Minnesota, on June 15, 1920, three young African American traveling circus workers were lynched after having been accused of raping a white woman, and were jailed pending a grand jury hearing. Physicians' subsequent examination of the woman found no evidence of rape or assault. The alleged motive and action by a mob were consistent with the community policing model. So, a lot of this stuff was just, you know, they would just make up lies just to give a reason, just to do it. Minding your business, you just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And if you were just, you know, pretty much one of those things where if you fit the description, you know, they could just take you out and just kill you, hang you, and let nothing happen to you. Now, listen to this. This is at the start of the 20th century in the United States, lynching was a photographic sport. People sent picture postcards of lynchings they had witnessed. And you can find these on the internet. And I found some of these pictures. I mean, they were just you know how a postcard has a picture on the front and then on the back, you know, you write the address where it's going to, and you write a little message, and it's got a place for the stamp. And usually they're of, you know, pictures of trees, mountains, you know, stuff like that. Well, these postcards had pictures of dead black people on them, hanging from trees. Some were burnt. And these were pictures that they put into the mail and sent other people. It didn't bother them at all. You know.
They are satanic people.
They had children. Oh, I'm sorry. Say again.
I said they are just satanic people. That they will put that foolishness in the mail and mail it to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is something nice and good.
Matter of fact, I had talked about this one before, and there was a documentary done about this. Matter of fact, I think next month I'm going to finally get to see this documentary because it's going to be at a place that I can actually go see it. And I've been trying to see this for a while. And this happened in 1898. This happened in Wilmington, North Carolina, where you had a black man named Alex Manley. He had his own newspaper, and he wrote an editorial. He noted that consensual relationships took place between white women and black men and said that many of the latter had white fathers. His reference to he was saying, in other words, he was saying that, you know, black men were having sex with white women. Well, when he said that, white people in town got pissed, and they burnt down his printing press and business, ran black leaders out of town, and killed a lot of other black people in town, and pretty much burnt the city down to the ground because they got mad, and you know, there's that mob rule. I mean, you know, think sometimes they still think they can do stuff like that. You know, they get mad about something, all of a sudden they get, you know, and they just want to kill and burn down and all this kind of stuff. And I think a lot of them still think they can do that kind of mess. There were also, you know, soldiers that were coming home from the war. Some of them got, you know, there's stories of some of them getting lynched. There's some stories about some soldiers being lynched in their uniform. And these are the same people, you know, love the country and the military so much that, you know, they would kill a serviceman because for the simple reason he was black. And the Klan had a lot to do with this kind of stuff too. But I'm telling you, it's just, whenever you get a chance, just get online and look this stuff up. You'll be pissed. You'll get pissed off reading this stuff. Because a lot of stuff, I didn't want to read a lot of stuff myself because they're just, you know, too jacked up. In a few minutes, we'll talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where Black Wall Street was, burnt down over a lie. Right now, I think 39 39 people died, 26 African Americans, 13 whites, and they burnt that community down to the ground. And there's some cases, not some cases, but some people believe that they also, not only did they burn Black Wall Street down over a lot, actually had bombs dropped on some of the buildings on Black Wall Street. Burnt it down to the ground because of a lie. And it's basically, they basically burnt it down because some of the white business owners in town were jealous that the blacks in town that had business on Black Wall Street were successful. And so they got jealous, made up a lie, and that they burnt it down. Just burnt it down to the ground. See if I can find something. I'll read you the numbers in just a second. In 1946, a mob of white men shot and killed two young African-American couples near Moore's Ford Bridge in Walton County, Georgia, 60 miles east of Atlanta. This lynching of four young sharecroppers, one a World War II veteran, shocked the nation. The attack was a key factor in President Harry S. Truman's making civil rights a priority of his administration. Although the FBI investigated the crime, they were unable to prosecute, or they just didn't want to prosecute, didn't want to do it. So you talked about Emmett Till, how those white guys got off with that, which is just, you know, still pisses a lot of people off to this day, because that's just, you know, a woman made up a lie, they killed him, got off, and then they did an interview after the court case, and then they pretty much, yeah, we did it. And nobody, you know, actually, you see, he was beaten. One of his eyes was gorged out. He was shot in the head. He was weighed with a 70-pound cotton gin fan tied around his neck with barbed wire. All over a lot. You know. So the next thing I read to you before I play the clips, starting in 1882, there was a total of 119 lynched, 1883, 130, 1884, 211, 1885, 184, 1886, 138, 1887, 120, 1888, 137, 1889, 170, 1890, 96, 1891, 184, 1892, 230, 1893, 152, 1894, 192, 1885, 179, 1886, 123, 1897, 158, 1898, 120, 1899, 106, 1900, 115, 1901, 130, 1902, 92, 1903, 99, 1904, 83, 1905, 62, 1906, 65, 1907, 61, 1908, 97, 1909, 82, 1910, 76, 1911, 67, 1912, 64, 1914, 55, 1915, 69, 1916, 54. Now, as I'm reading these numbers, what's going to happen, and I'm not giving the amount of the white people that were lynched in a particular year, I'm just giving a total number. But what's happening is the total number of white people are going down and the total number of black people are going up. I stopped at 1917. I'll go back to 1917 just a second. But there were a couple of years that there were more white people lynched than black people. 1884, 1885, and then from then on, the number of black people went up. Matter of fact, 1892, 161 black people were lynched. In 1897, 123. And then, matter of fact, in 1913, only one white person was lynched and 51 black people were lynched. So the numbers of white people, you know, started going down. 1915, there were 13 white people. 1916, there were four. But all the while, the number of black people going up. 1917, for example, there were two white people lynched in the country. Two versus 36 black people. 1918, there was 64. 1919, 83. 1920, 61. 1921, 64. 1922, 57. 1923, 33. Now, interesting here, 1924, no white people were lynched. So there were 16 total. There were 16 black people total. 1925, no more white people, 17. 1926, there were 7 versus 23 black people, made that total 30. 1927, 0 white people, but 16 black people. 1928, 1 white person, 10 black people. 1929, 3 white people, 7 black people. 1930, 1 white person versus 20 black people. 1931, 1 white person versus 12 black people. 1932, there were 8 total, 2 white, 6 black. 1933, 2 white, 24 black, which made that total 26. 1934, 0 white, 15 black. 35, 2 white, 18 black. 1936, 0 white people. So from 1936 on, there was either 0 white people or one. Matter of fact, there's some years there's only one white person hung. One white person lynched, and everybody else were black. 34, no white people lynched, 15 black people, 35, 2 white people lynched, 18 black people. And then from 36, everybody lynched were black. There were 8 black people in 36, 8 black people in 37, 6 in 1938. There was 1 white person in 39, but 2 black people, so that made that 3. So the total started going down. But most of the people that were lynched were black people. 47, there was 1 black person. 49, there were 3. There were some years that nobody. 52, nobody. 53, nobody. 54, nobody. 55, there were 3. 56, 0. There was 1 white person lynched in 57. 58, nobody. 1 black person in 59. 60, nobody. 61, there was 1 black person. 62, there was nobody. 63, there was 1 black person. 64, there were 3, 2 white, 1 black. 65, 0, 66, 0, 67, 0, 68, 0. So, here's your grand total of white people, 1,297. Black people, 3,445. Which made the grand total of 1,742 people that were lynched, that they have record of, that were lynched in this country. So while a lot of this stuff may have started off as, how you say, since they didn't have courts and all that kind of stuff, but toward the end, it got to be no more than a tool that white supremacists use to keep black people down in the country. And I can say also minorities also, so I can include black people and minorities, keep them down in their place, get them to understand, you know, that white people pretty much could do whatever they wanted to do. And they can do what, they could lie on you to kill you and get away with it. They wouldn't face any consequences or none of that. Nothing would happen to them. So they were pretty much getting away with murder. They don't seem to have a problem with it. They don't seem to, you know, they don't seem to have an issue. And these are the same people, the very same people that go to church on Sunday and pray and whatever they did. These are the same, very same people that were probably part of the Klan, that were, you know, policemen, judges, teachers, and they out there killing folks, you know, killing folks for no reason and getting away with it. So the next time somebody tells me or tries to convince me that this country is great, I'm going to say bullshit.
With a capital B.
Killing. Yeah, yeah. Now, I tell you what, we're going to do this. We're going to spell it all in capital letters. B, capital U, capital L, capital S, capital H, capital I, capital T. Bullshit.
That's right.
Bullshit. Bullshit. Because you're not going to sit up there and tell me that this country is great. And you sitting around, you got people in this country killing other people for no reason and getting away with it. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. You know, so, you know, other people may, you know, see this and kind of want to brush it, you know, brush it up under the rug and pretend that it didn't happen. But nah, nah, we're not going to let that happen. You got people to this very day still mad at Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, still talking shit about the man. But if you bring up something, you know, matter, I got into an argument today, not it wasn't a big one. Here in North Carolina, as you, you know, may know or may not know, right down the street, well, I can't say down the street, but at University of North Carolina is about, from here, 45 minutes to an hour drive from here. And on the campus, and this doesn't have anything to do with the story, but I just want to tell you this. On the campus of Carolina, there was a statue that represented the students that fought in the Civil War, and the statue was called Silent Sam. Well, you had a bunch of people sometime last year, I can't remember the exact date, but they tore the statue down, tied ropes around it, and they pulled it down. So you got a lot of people that, for whatever reason, same people that will tell you, which makes no sense to me at all, you know, never forget about the Civil War, but anytime anybody brings up anything else, you know, like when black people bring up slavery or bring up the reason why they fought the war to begin with, nah, forget about that. But they'll try to drive this, you know, thing in your head about the Civil War, you know, blah, but the South lost, get over it. Anyway, they pulled the statue down. People got arrested. This one sister, she was activist. She poured red paint on it, mixed some of her blood in the paint, and poured the paint on the statue and got arrested for it. So this has been going on for quite a while. So they had a meeting, I want to say yesterday or today. They had a meeting recently. So instead of bringing the statue, leaving the statue down, they're going to build a building for the statue. Last time I saw it, I think the estimated the building's gonna cost them $5 million to build, to put the statue in a building. These are the same people that want this statue. You know, they got the same argument, and I don't understand it. The losing side, to me, it seems like the losing side is picking what we do with these monuments and all this. These monuments don't mean jack to me. They don't mean shit to me. I don't care about it. All they're doing is just representing a time in this country where they can suppress black people. That's it. So they don't. And I did a story not too long ago that a lot of these statues didn't go up. They didn't go up. A lot of them didn't go up right after the Civil War. The Civil War ended in 1865. A lot of these statues didn't go up 50, 60, 70 years after the fact. By a group of women that wanted to, you know, their main thing wasn't to celebrate history. Their main thing was to get this thing, you know, stuck in people's head that, you know, that the war that the South fought wasn't about slavery. It was about, you know, states' rights and all that other bullshit. But, you know, we know the deal. You know, they try to sugarcoat this stuff and pretend that nobody with good sense knows what the deal is. So I got into a slight riff. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I do this every day. I don't care. But, you know, people still got this thing in their head that the Civil War was not fought over slavery. You know, and I told this story a few months ago that on I-95 South, that somebody on a piece of land right off the interstate put up a giant Confederate flag. Every time I drive by there, if I'm paying attention, I give it the finger and I talk shit about it. That flag means nothing to me. You know, if I had one of them flags, I would wipe my feet on it. If I ran out of toilet paper, I'd wipe my ass with it. I don't care about that flag. I don't care about those statues. It amazes me that this country is letting the side that lost the war dictate. You know, oh, this is about my history. You know, where are the statues of the slaves at? There are no statues of slaves. But, you know, they want to romanticize this mess and pretend that it was all great and it was all, you know, this was a battle because, you know, a lot of people probably, that guy told them to fight. Man, okay, all right. Don't get me started on religion, because I'm not. Don't get me started on that. This is not the time or the place for that. But this whole notion that, you know, it bugs the hell out of me because it's straight bullshit. So don't come at me pretending that this country is all that. This country is not all that. I didn't want to bring this up, but I'll bring it up, and then I'll go into the clip. A former president died. They're going to have this thing tomorrow. I'm not going to talk ill of the dead, but let us remember that he was Ronnie Reagan's vice president for 8 years, and he was president for 4. He was St. Ronnie Reagan when they had the war on drugs, when drugs were introduced into the black community. So I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not gonna like let him get off just because he's dead. You know, he had a part to play in the drug thing. You know, so he's not innocent. You know, I'm not giving him the sainthood because I'm not doing that. But he played a part in that too. You know, he wasn't perfect or anything. I understand that, but he played the part, and I won't gonna bring him up because I I don't care. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. I don't care. So, I mean, just get off this thing where, you know, people want to proclaim that this country is so great. This country is not that great. It may be better than some other countries in the world. I give it that. But we're not number one. You know, this ain't about, you know, two teams playing soccer against each other, and we're rooting for, you know, this is nothing, this is, has nothing to do with that. But this country is not great. You know, country was founded on slavery. It was founded on genocide. It was founded on stolen property. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You know, I don't have the time to go on. You know, I'm just, but, you know, the only way that you're going to understand this stuff is that you need to take time out of your busy day, and I know everybody's busy. You need to take time out of your busy day or your busy week. You have a computer in your pocket. Don't take pictures of your lunch. Research a lot of this stuff. I'm telling you, you need to research this stuff. Because the number one reason why I do this show every Tuesday is to give you history on stuff that the schools don't tell you about. And if you got kids, I got grandkids. If you got kids or grandkids or whatever, you might want to go ahead and start telling them about some of this stuff. You ain't got to cram it on, you know, like all at once, but slowly tell them about this stuff, because if you don't tell them, you're not doing your job. The schools aren't going to tell them. Because when I did the show on Thanksgiving a couple of weeks ago, and it got to the part where, oh, they had a great big feast, They helped each other out. They became friends. That's bullshit. They didn't tell you about the part where, you know, the pilgrims decided they wanted to wipe out some 600 of a Native American, you know, nation. And then after that, every year after they did that, that's what they celebrated Thanksgiving for, is when they wiped out the whole the entire Native American nation. So they didn't have, you know, so people have this idea that Thanksgiving was, you know, the first thing, you know, they come here, the Indians help them out, they had this great big feast, and they became friends. No, they didn't. They did not become friends. They might have been friendly for a little while, but after that, them tendencies from the Europeans got the best of them, and they decided, you know what, y'all got some nice land. It'd be a shame if, you know, we gave you diseases and took it from you, or we killed you with a weapon. We just give you smallpox and we'll just take it from you. And that's what they did. But they don't talk about that part. So, and they damn sure don't talk about lynchings. I don't remember anything about lynchings when I was in school. Even when I was in college, I don't remember, you know, they would, bits and pieces, they might have talked about a little bit about, you know, a Black Wall Street here and there or whatever, but never did they get into the, you know, the real meat about this stuff. So we as black people, since we don't hardly read anyway, which is a shame, need to start reading about this stuff. We need to start telling your kids about this stuff. Because if you don't tell them, they ain't going to get it in school. You know, and then you're going to still have people walking around here making jokes about this stuff, which ain't funny. There's nothing funny about this. There's nothing funny about people, you know, being hung from a tree or a bridge, and then you're selling tickets to it like it's some kind of concert. And you got stuff about it in church bulletins. You're having picnics with people actually going out with blankets and putting blankets on the ground and eating. While there's, you know, it could be one person, could be two, could be a number of people hanging from trees. You know, so many people could have been burnt. They could have been, you know, tortured. It could have been. There's one case. I think it's one of these clips. I hope I got it. I was having some issue with
Brother
some
Anthony.
Clips, but there was, yeah.
Is there a picture of that where you see them sitting down eating while they're hanging somebody?
Now, I don't remember seeing any pictures like that. The only pictures there's quite a few pictures. I mean, there's like hundreds of pictures. There are a lot of pictures where they have, like, you can see like the crowds standing around, you know, the people that are hung. There are other pictures where they have pictures of burnt corpses on the ground and people standing around them. There's all kinds of pictures. Now, the picnic pictures, I need to look and see if I can find some of those. I'm sure there's probably a few out there somewhere. I just haven't looked, because a lot of these other pictures, when you go to Google and you just put in lynchings, and you put in, you know, you put in lynchings and then you put in images, and then they just start popping up, and all you're seeing are just, you know, a lot of these pictures are just people hanging from trees or hanging from bridges and all this kind of stuff. And that, you know, like I said, that one picture of that little white girl just standing there with this evil look on her face while she's standing there, and there's somebody in front of her hanging. I mean, that picture, the only thing you can see the feet hanging, but you can't see the rest of the body, and she just got this look on her face. Probably one of the most evilest looks I've ever seen on a human being. And, you know, and the reading I was doing, there's like a lot of them, a lot of the churches, they would talk about, you know, have this kind of, you know, talk about doing the service they were having, you know, hanging, and they were, you know, telling people about it, and they made it into like a community function. Or people, just groups of people just go out and they would just watch these people hang or tortured or burned or whatever. Like I said, there was one instance, I think I might have got the clip, where they hung this young brother, and they shot him. So while he was hanging, they shot him, like, I think one is that they shot him like over 100 times. They just shot them. They were just standing and just kind of, you know, like target practice. They were just standing and they just shot them over 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so like I said, some of these stories, when you read some of them, it's like, boy, you're talking about getting pissed. It piss you off. And it should piss you off.
Mm-hmm.
It should piss everybody off, you know, that they were just letting these people get away with this stuff. And then at the same time, they want to pretend that this country is all, you know, greater than every other country on the planet. No, nah, I don't think so. Don't think so. So let's get into the clips. They're not long clips. So I just want, matter of fact, this one's a 3-minute clip. This one is, this one's about a lynching that took place in Texas back in the 1800s. Listen to this, and then I'll be back.
James Allen has collected a photographic record of racial violence in the South. For the past 20 years, he's found horrifying pictures in the family albums of ordinary Southern homes. Many are postcards that were mass-produced as souvenirs.
Some of these images were printed in the tens of thousands and sold for a dime or a dollar a piece. Some of the postcards tell you where to write and the discounts you'll get if you buy 1, 10, or 100. They were sold in drugstores and pharmacies. They were sold on the street. I purchased a photograph from a woman. The photographer sold them door to door. Her mother bought the image for $2. A murder that is of particular interest to me was of a 17-year-old boy by the name of Jess Washington in Waco, Texas, in 1916. He was seriously mentally challenged. The wife of the farmer that he worked for was found dead. He was arrested. He was brought to trial. The trial took from 10 until 12. And when the jury came back at noon and found him guilty, someone in the courtroom, and it could have been, would have been anyone in the courtroom, screamed out, "Get that nigger." In one of the worst and cruelest treatments of a human being began. Jess was kicked down out of the courthouse, down the back steps where a crowd of several hundred was waiting for him. They put a chain on his neck. There were 16,000 people crowding the street to watch this boy be tortured. Jess was tied to the chain over a branch of a tree. The fire was started. They raised Jess from the fire up into the air so that the crowd could see him. There were cheers, like at a football game, cheering the torturers on. When Jess tried to climb up the chain, hand by hand, they cut his fingers off one by one, so that all he could do was slap at the chain. They lowered him back down in the fire. A man came up and castrated him. Another man kept a pole so that he couldn't crawl out of the fire. And time and again, they pulled him up to keep him from dying so that the crowd could be satisfied, until he finally died.
Okay, and that didn't take place in some country overseas. That took place here in America. Now, this next clip, I was talking about earlier, the bridge in Mississippi. How do you say this? Shubuda, I think that's how you say the name. Shubuda, Mississippi. This was about a bridge that they had in Shibuda, Mississippi, which they used to call the Hanging Bridge. And listen to this.
It's been 70 years now since two African-American 14-year-olds, Ernest Green and Charles Lane, were abducted from the Clark County Jail in Quitman, Mississippi, by an all-white vigilante mob that beat, mutilated, and hung their bodies from the notorious Hanging Bridge near Shibuda because of what the mob believed was the attempted rape of Dorothy Martin, a school-age white girl that was seen in the presence of two African-American boys along the roadside by another passing white, which quickly led to then Clark County Sheriff Lloyd McNeil taking the two boys into custody for attempted rape. After the two boys spent 5 days in a Clark County jail in Quitman, it was on a Sunday night that a caravan of at least 50 whites from Shibuda drove to Quitman and demanded that the jailer give them the keys to the cell holding the two African-American boys. The next day, Ernest Green and Charles Lane's mutilated bodies were taken down from the most notorious hanging bridge and loaded onto the back of Herman Thrash's pickup truck and brought to downtown Shibuda to be openly displayed to the public as an example to all African Americans that this is what could happen to them. And many African Americans in Shibuda have been petrified of whites ever since. After the families refused to accept the boys' bodies in their condition, white-owned Patton's Funeral Home placed the boys' bodies in pine boxes and county inmates buried them just outside of the local white cemetery located next to the Chickasaw River. The date was October 12, 1942, and not the first time this bridge had seen bloodshed. Nearly everyone who lives in Shibuda these days or that is familiar with the small southern town knows of the infamous Hanging Bridge, but barely any details about its bloody history, and even less about the vigilantes that continued to live in Shibuda long after the lynchings took place. OCAT 1959 News, to no avail, could not find anyone around Shibuda that was willing to say anything on camera, though a few people did share what they knew about the Hanging Bridge off camera, proven that the fear factor, even in 2012, is still in effect. On December 21, 1918, the same bridge had been a death site of four other African Americans, two men, Andrew Clark and Major Clark, plus two African American women, Alma House and Maggie House, whom were all hung from this notorious hanging bridge due to vigilante justice by another all-white mob. And though there is no statute of limitations for murder, until this day in 2012, there has never been a thorough investigation or an arrest made by the local Clark County Sheriff's Office for these lynchings, nor any other homicides of African Americans involving whites in Clark County. Less than a week after Green and Lane were lynched in Shibuda, another African American named Howard Wash was abducted from the Jones County Jail and lynched near Laurel, Mississippi, some 30-odd miles from Shibuda, a phone which prompted northern newspapers to write embarrassing news articles that caused the FBI to launch an investigation in Laurel, Mississippi that led to 5 arrests but not 1 conviction. But still, that was much more than was ever done in Shibuda for a total of 6 lynchings. People say that some things will never change, but in Shibuda, Mississippi, it really has. There was a time when Shibuda was the largest town in Clark County and the center of commerce for the area, but it was after the 4 Negro lynchings in 1918 that prompted the migration of African Americans to northern cities like Albany, New York, Cleveland, Detroit, and Chicago, rendering Shibuda today a stagnated township with a population of 651, and just the next level above a ghost town. The notorious Hanging Bridge is no longer in business, but the Clark County Sheriff's Office is still here. Marvin Carter, OCAT 1959 News, Shibuda, Mississippi.
Okay. Well, that was a story about the hanging bridge that I didn't know anything about. Has a few more details of some of this this lynching that went on in the country. I'm going to play a clip about the about Black Wall Street. It's going to be number, where's that? Okay, number four. And then the last clip I'll play tonight, I'm going to be talking about a race riot that went down in 1919 and the lynching of a young man named Will Brown. But for this clip, we're going to play this clip and then we'll get the other one.
American South, we don't talk about slavery, we don't talk about lynching, we don't talk about segregation. We've actually littered the landscape with the iconography of the Confederacy, which we romanticize, we honor. And I think that has left us vulnerable to replicating those features of white supremacy that we've actually never repudiated. This is the entrance of the Legacy Museum from Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. And we have this icon to just talk about this uniquely American challenge of being a nation that's recovering from the legacy of slavery and also being the nation with the highest rate of incarceration in the world. Montgomery, a city shaped by slavery, because in fact that is the history of this community.
It's almost overwhelming how many of these people are represented. It's sobering. And I'm thinking about how I'm glad my family, maybe glad is not a word I should use. I'm grateful that our story ended differently. Because all of these people, their story is much more tragic.
People in this country were acculturated, socialized into seeing black people mistreated, abused, brutalized, tortured. And that optic becomes key to how we can sociologically get comfortable with the phenomenon of lynching. I think for African Americans who were forced to remain silent about this violence. That's what terrorism can do. It can, many people were lynched because they complained about a loved one being lynched, and it would get them lynched too. And it creates a kind of weight, a kind of burden.
I was not aware of my uncle's story. I was actually a grown woman when I talked to my dad, and I was visiting at home, and we were just having one of our chats. And he told me the story of my Uncle Fred and how he actually was sent away as a young boy and never came back. That's how he migrated eventually to New York. Fred was about 15 and he was away working that morning. A little girl said someone pushed her off of a back porch. So her dad wanted to find out who pushed her off the back porch. And they said, well, we know it was Fred. She was with them. It was a group of men. She said it was not Tom's board, but the group wanted it to be my Uncle Fred. And my granddad, he had more than likely seen a hanging. He knew how that would end. So he had my daddy to run downtown to tell Fred to not come back. And from there, my granddad took Fred to Chattanooga. And from Chattanooga, he eventually ended in New York, and that is where he's buried today. There was 11 children in all, but my dad is the only one buried in Gaston.
You know, the black people that fled this region by the millions in response to this terror didn't go to Cleveland and Chicago and Detroit as immigrants. They went there as refugees and exiles from terror in the American South. Henry Smith 17 is a very famous lynching in Paris, Texas in 1893 because 10,000 people showed up to watch this lynching. And we had several of these public spectacle lynchings. John Hartfield was lynched in Ellisville, Mississippi. They actually advertised the lynching in the newspaper. And this accommodation of violence and terror was something that was frequent, which is why you would sometimes have hundreds or thousands of people celebrating their ability to exercise this kind of control over black people. And whether you were the person cutting off the fingers and mutilating the bodies, or you were the person enjoying your deviled eggs and lemonade while this spectacle violence took place, something tragic is happening to you. People brought their children, they made their little kids watch human beings be burned or drowned or beaten. And I think that creates a kind of injury. And it has certainly created a disease where we've become indifferent to the victimization of black and brown people. And we have to treat that disease.
Last month, when I got off work, there were two men in a black pickup with two huge Confederate flags flapping in the night following me home. They pulled over to the side and just looked at me. And I just looked at them. I guess it was an intimidation tactic, maybe. I pulled off and I hauled down that street and they were behind me. This is in Gaston, 2018. I have very good neighbors. I just wanted to make it to my street. Went on past, once I turned off onto my street, that was it.
The African American community has lived this pain and lived with it even still. When black visitors leave this space, they're going to go places where they're going to be presumed dangerous and guilty and have to navigate that. You know, even when they get their coffee at a Starbucks, recent events tell us you can be targeted. And so I think for people of color who have to live with this reality, experiencing it for a moment should be something we're all willing to do.
And this clip is, I kind of wish it would be a little bit longer, but it's good. You know, if I have to do another show on Black Wall Street, I've got no problem doing another show. But this one's a short clip, give you a little background on Black Wall Street. If you don't know anything about it, you know, this could be somebody's first time hearing about this. If this is your first time hearing about Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Black Wall Street, give yourself some homework and go look this up and read about this, because this is an instance where I know there are some people I just want to, for some reason, want you to believe that black people can't be successful, that black people can't run their own businesses and do their own thing. This is a case, even way back in the day, they could do this, and we still can do this. But it's just a shame that they got burnt down because of jealousy, because of bigotry, because of bullshit. Put these people out, killed people for no reason. No reason at all. So play this, and then I'll play the very last clip, and then that'll be the end of the show. But listen to this. If this is the first time you've heard this, please, whenever you can, just go look this up and read about Black Wall Street. You know, like I said, they don't tell you about this in school, so you got to take it upon yourself to get your history. So play it, and I'll be right back.
You've probably never read about the Tulsa race riots in history books when you were in school, but it's definitely a story that's worth knowing about, especially considering the riots that are currently taking place in Baltimore. The Tulsa race riots occurred in 1921, and it was basically a war by the KKK against a very successful and prosperous black community referred to as Black Wall Street. According to reports, the best description of Black Wall Street, or Little Africa as it was also known, would be to compare it to a mini Beverly Hills. It was the golden door of the black community during the early 1900s, and it proved that African Americans could create a successful infrastructure. Black America's most prosperous community, Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, went up in flames June 1, 1921 in a KKK-led Tulsa race riot. This community consisted of individuals that looked out for one another. But more than that, it consisted of individuals that were beyond successful. Some of the most intelligent minds got together and created some of the most successful businesses. They looked out for one another. They created an education system that we can only dream of today. They believed in nepotism only because these black individuals had been so disenfranchised by society that they felt that they can only look out for one another. And as a result, money stayed in their community. In fact, it was passed off about 100 times within the community before it left the community. Right now, when it comes to a black neighborhood, a dollar lasts in that neighborhood for about 15 minutes, and then it leaves. And so they managed to create a society that was successful. They were prospering. But it turns out that white individuals in neighboring areas were not too happy about that, particularly the KKK. So this led to a riot, and the way the KKK crafted this riot shows you exactly how deep that jealousy and that envy was. What they did is they accused a man of raping a white woman. But of course that man didn't rape anyone. They just wanted to accuse him so they could go into the community and start violence and trouble. And so they accused this man. A number of KKK members go into the community, and as one black man is armed, ready to defend himself, he's confronted by a white individual who asks him what he's about to do with that gun. And he tells the white man, well, I'm going to do what I need to do if I need to defend myself. At that point, there was a physical altercation over the gun. The white man gets shot, and he's killed, and then the riots erupt. Now, the outcome of this is beyond disturbing. The night's carnage left 3,000 African Americans dead and over 600 successful businesses lost. Among these were 21 churches, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, and 2 movie theaters, plus a hospital, a bank, a post office, libraries, schools, law offices, a half dozen private airplanes, and even a bus system. So the KKK goes into the successful black community and absolutely destroys it. And so when we talk about violence in the United States, and when we talk about things like white privilege or institutional racism, this is why it's incredibly important to take these issues seriously. Because when you look at the black community and you wonder why it is that they're angry, why it is that they're rioting, why it is that they're fighting back against things like police brutality and institutional racism, you have to look at the historical context of this country. You have to consider the fact that there was no restitution in this case. These people, 3,000 people, lost their lives. Their businesses were lost. What they had built was completely demolished. And you fast forward to today and you look at statistics and you realize, yeah, maybe things aren't quite as violent as the Tulsa race riots, but you have to consider the fact that African Americans are 4 times more likely to get arrested for marijuana. In fact, if you have a black sounding name, you are 50% less likely to get hired for a job. When you look at our private prisons, or if you look at the school to prison pipeline, African Americans and Latinos are much more likely to be victims of that. And so these are the types of things that are holding them back. This is the type of institutional racism that we talk about on the show on a regular basis. And this is the type of story that we don't learn about in history classes. And again, you look at something like this and you realize that if you just create an opportunity for people to prosper, they will prosper, regardless of their race, regardless of their background. That's why education is important. That's why making sure that you give everyone an equal opportunity is important. And that's why it's incredibly important to take stories like the Baltimore riots as seriously as possible and understand that even though there are those who are violent and are doing things that might be considered wrong, there are also those who are legitimately arguing about something that they've been victims of for a very long time.
Okay, and the last clip for tonight is, this is talking about the race riot of 1919 in Omaha, Nebraska. and the lynching of a young man named Will Brown. Play this and be right back.
In the late 1800s, Omaha, Nebraska was a booming western city that was soon to become number one in the world in livestock meat production. In the early 1900s, nearly 80% of Omaha's population of an estimated 125,000 people had livestock-related jobs. These workers were primarily of European descent, and from 1910 to 1919, their participation in labor strikes and the First World War left many vacancies at the meat packaging plants. To fill the void, company owners vigorously recruited blacks in the southern states. There were ads and papers in Omaha and throughout the South that beckoned blacks to come north to better wages and living conditions. The wages that blacks were paid at the Omaha plants were lower than white workers, but it was significantly more money than they could earn in the South. Hundreds of blacks began to replace white plant workers, and by 1915, a burgeoning black community was established near the meat packaging plants in South Omaha and the near north side of the city. A new African-American newspaper called The Monitor began circulation in the summer of 1915. The Monitor was published weekly with news stories, columns, and advertising that was vital to establishing a strong sense of community among blacks in Omaha. By 1920, over 10,000 African-Americans were living in Omaha. Because of the rapid growth in the African-American population and employment situations at the meat packaging plants, racial tension began to build in Omaha. This tension culminated in the summer of 1919, when one plant worker in particular met a horrible fate.
This was the period of red hot summer. This was the period where about that what it is, you'd already had the riots in St. Louis, other places. And now you're having them in Omaha. What happened was, They had a woman say that she had been molested or had been sexually abused by a black man. And that's all that needed to be said.
On September 25th, 1919, Agnes Lobeck identified 40-year-old Will Brown as the man who attacked her. Brown was then arrested and taken to the Douglas County Courthouse. Before Brown was even identified, a civic storm was already brewing in Omaha due to a series of inflammatory stories published in the Omaha Bee and struggles for political power between racketeer Thomas Dennison and Omaha's mayor, Edward Smith.
What's interesting is that the mayor attempted to keep them from taking Will Brown out of jail, and he suffered from an inch of his life being taken from him. And that was really the intent from the very beginning, to really kill him, as well as to bring about the racial tension even more so.
On the evening of September 28, 1919, a crowd of an estimated 5,000 to 10,000 people gathered outside the Douglas County Courthouse and demanded that Brown be handed over to them. Inside the courthouse, a frightened judge and other prisoners sent a note down to the crowd, saying that they would surrender Brown. The bloodthirsty crowd could not wait and rushed into the courthouse to seize Brown. Once in the hands of the crowd, Brown was beaten, hung from a lamppost, and shot more than 100 times. Actor Henry Fonda, at the time just 14 years old, witnessed the horrendous event from a second-story window at his father's printing company across the street from the courthouse. The ghastly melee ended with the burning of Will Brown's body. An Omaha World Herald photographer captured one of the most infamous photographs in American history. After the riot, federal troops were called in, and for 2 days, Omaha was under martial law. Even though over 100 people were arrested in connection with the riot and the murder of Will Brown, no one was charged. For Omaha's black community, an editorial picture published in the Monitor spoke volumes. Will Brown was buried in 1919 in an unmarked grave in Powder's Field at Forest Lawn Cemetery in Omaha. 90 years later, in July of 2009, a man from Riverside, California, Chris Hebert, who has no ties to the city of Omaha, and has never visited before, was moved to pay $450 of his own money for a marker for Will Brown's grave. Hebert said that he watched a special on actor Henry Fonda, which mentioned the riot and how it affected his life and his acting career. Hebert also said that he hopes people will stop by the headstone and reflect on what happened to Will Brown in 1919, so that we may never let ourselves sink again to this level of inhumanity.
Okay, so that's the last clip for tonight. even though this topic, you know, you could talk about this for hours, days, weeks, you know, to give you a little bit of a background on why, you know, you have people that still think that lynching's okay. You had someone, like I said, in Mississippi, run for office, make a joke about this, and still won, which I don't understand it. This is something that, you don't joke about. But, you know, this is America. You can pretty much say what you want to say, believe what you want to believe, and, you know, whatever. So, thank Brother Mo for calling in, as usual. And this is one of the shows that, you know, a lot of people don't call in. They just like to sit back and listen to. So I appreciate that. Thank you for listening in tonight. And I will be back next week with another topic I hadn't decided what I'm going to talk about yet. But I'll be here talking about something. Probably something that the schools are not teaching you. But I will be back next week. So I'll be back next week, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 8 to 9:30. See you next week. Peace out.